When Zachary Mallory was a teenager, he published a social media post that would change his life. In it, he told his friends, family, and neighbors in Independence, Missouri, that he was gay.
I came out my freshman year of high school. I posted a Facebook status, and I told everybody basically who I am, and this is who I am, and this is how my life is going to be.
His family was supportive, but he couldn't escape anti-gay messages from classmates. He says he was regularly beaten up and bullied, and suddenly found himself feeling very lonely.
I felt extremely isolated. I felt completely shut off from the world.
It eventually became too much. Mallory attempted suicide several times, and he sought out what's called conversion therapy at a local church that claimed it could make gay people straight.
I didn't want to be gay. I didn't want to have sex with men. I didn't want to have that attraction. I mean, I was already being rejected as it was. I wanted to get rid of that rejection.
After high school, he started seeing a therapist who told him that conversion therapy is considered unethical by the American Psychiatric Association. It's been banned in 16 states. So he quit and started doing advocacy work to stop conversion therapy from happening. He was part of the campaign that succeeded in banning the practice in Kansas City last month. Today, Mallory is 23. And through his advocacy work, he's finally found the community he needed. He says that meeting and talking to people in person is much more meaningful than doing it online.
Because they're going to listen to you more if you're face-to-face than looking at a Facebook message or looking at a Facebook post or Twitter or an Instagram photo or something. Having those face-to-face conversations is what creates real change.
As a health reporter, I meet lots of people in Kansas City and across the Midwest who, like Zachary Mallory, feel lonely. Some live in remote small towns. Some have lost loved ones. Some who've been left out due to racism. And some just feel like they have no place in their community. This isn't just an inconvenient fact of life. Experts have found that loneliness can be bad for our mental and physical health, maybe even deadly. In the Midwest, we don't talk much about the problem, let alone take steps to address it. But in the United Kingdom, the government recently decided to take on the challenge of loneliness and find a solution. But is it really possible for a country to fix loneliness for good? Not just for individuals, but across an entire nation? This year, I went to find out. This is a special episode of KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Alex Smith, a health reporter at KCUR. This hour, join me on a trip to visit some of the UK's anti-loneliness programs in action. I started in the same place where the campaign was first introduced. In the heart of London, at Buckingham Palace, the daily changing of the guard reminds crowds of tourists that the United Kingdom is a country with staying power. Over the centuries, the British have fought off famine, plague, economic depression, the Nazis. And a few blocks away, at 10 Downing Street in early 2018, Prime Minister Theresa May announced plans to take on a new threat to the lives of Britons.
In a country of more than 60 million people, and in an age where we can instantly connect with friends, relatives and even strangers around the world, it may seem counterintuitive that any of us could find ourselves feeling lonely.
May announced the start of a national campaign to address loneliness across the UK, including spending millions of dollars for community programs and a new long-term strategy for the National Health Service. She also introduced a new government position, the Minister for Loneliness. The reaction was probably not what the Prime Minister had hoped for.
That really sounds like a Victorian euphemism for a gigolo. Good evening, madame. I am the Minister of Loneliness.
The night after the announcement, Stephen Colbert and other commenters didn't hold back.
How is it supposed to work? The ministry has reviewed your application, and you are not lonely enough, I'm afraid. Your application for affection has been denied.
Although I was initially kind of shocked, I was actually quite flattered by it.
That's Tracy Crouch, the UK's first Minister for Loneliness and a Conservative Member of Parliament. She says she was glad the issue got attention, but admits she wouldn't have minded something else for her business cards.
Actually, there's a minister in the UAE called who has the title of Minister of Happiness and Wellbeing, and quite frankly, I think I would have preferred that title to loneliness.
But the campaign is no joke. Research over the past decade suggests that our brains may be wired to crave social connection. When we talk with friends, hold a newborn, or even sing with other people, our brains release oxytocin, a chemical that helps us relax and strengthen social bonds. But without those connections, we can suffer. And researchers like Pam Qualter of the University of Manchester say that loneliness isn't necessarily the same thing as just being physically isolated from other people.
It's about you feeling that you are disconnected from other people. And you might feel lonely because you haven't got as many friends as you would like, or you might feel lonely because you haven't got that quality relationship with another person.
There are cultural and genetic differences that influence how loneliness affects people, but scientists suspect that when many people feel lonely, their brains switch into fight or flight mode. Their nervous systems can get flooded with the stress hormone cortisol, and that can be hard to shut off.
It impacts the inflammatory process. That's why we start seeing effects for coronary heart disease, hypertension, because we've got too much cortisol in our system.
Researchers have also found links between loneliness and mental health problems and sleep disruption. Some say loneliness could be as risky to our health as smoking or obesity. And when large segments of the population are all feeling lonely, it might amount to a full-fledged public health crisis. Some experts think that may be what's happening right now in many struggling blue-collar towns and rural parts of the U.S. and similar areas in the U.K. Unlike almost everywhere else in the developed world, these two countries are seeing average lifespans decline due to preventable disease, substance abuse, or suicide. Stephen Wolfe of Virginia Commonwealth University studies the problem. He thinks that loneliness could be a root cause of what some have called deaths of despair.
Lack of social support, or in plain language, people having your back, has tended to deteriorate in many communities. And there's less of a support system to help struggling families and neighborhoods cope with these problems in these communities.
Scientists in the U.S. are now actually developing drugs they say could fight the emotional effects of loneliness. But in the U.K., experts think they have a better solution.
We're going to start doing some mudras now. Now, mudras are our hand gestures that we use in Bollywood. They're also used in classical, so they come from classical dance.
At a hospital in London, a cheery young dance teacher named Georgia Cornwall welcomes a dozen elderly patients in wheelchairs who are recovering from falls or strokes. She's there to teach them Bollywood dance, the style from Indian movies that can be almost comically energetic.
So I'm going to put on a song, and we're going to try those movements now with this song.
Oh God, one more minute.
That's it, good.
As she turns the music up, the faces of her quiet class members seem to flash with combinations of curiosity and terror. The class is part physical therapy, but more importantly, it's meant to help patients be more social.
Last time to the right, up, and down. Left side now, up, and down.
Bollywood dance is a recent addition to the care the hospital offers, and ward manager Diana Belcher says she's been surprised by its effects on the patients recovering here.
If you look at a patient before they go to the dance class, and if you look at them after, they're so much different. It just cheers them up.
Above your head!
Within about a half an hour, many of the class members seem to have come to life. They're smiling and doing shoulder shrugs and bouncy kicks from their wheelchairs. Dance classes like this and other social activities could soon be as common in British healthcare as blood pressure medication. This year, the National Health Service, which provides free healthcare to all residents of the UK, announced the creation of a new kind of healthcare worker, social prescribers, who will work in clinics across the country to refer patients to try new social activities like Bollywood dance classes. Simon Stevens is the head of the National Health Service.
And it could be ranging from gardening, through to knitting, through to dancing, through to all kinds of local activities that overcome the isolation and the loneliness and help people remain active, help them with a sense of purpose and a sense of social connection.
The NHS plans to have 1,000 social prescribers within the next 2 years, but that's just the tip of the iceberg of a movement to address loneliness that's already taking shape across the country. The UK's loneliness program may just be getting started, but it's already taking healthcare in some new directions. And early research on the problem has also turned up some surprises, including who the loneliest people actually are. Hundreds of young German fans in blue jerseys fill the streets before a soccer match in Manchester, England. This rainy northwestern city is the third largest in the UK. It's a city full of young people, known for its music scene and soccer. But for many young people, life in Greater Manchester can be tough.
Yeah, there's not a lot of stuff to do around here. So kids get bored and start vandalising stuff and spray painting and getting into crimes and getting yourself in trouble because there's nothing to do around here.
Lee Smellhurst-Hudson is a 17-year-old from the Manchester borough of Oldham. It's one of the most economically deprived areas in the UK. In parts of Oldham, nearly 2 in 3 kids live in poverty. When researchers first started looking into loneliness, many assumed it was mainly a problem of older people. But a national survey found that 40% of British young people said they felt lonely, compared to 30% of older people. In the past few years, even before the Prime Minister's creation of a national effort, the City of Manchester has made youth loneliness a citywide priority. Officials started a campaign that involves nonprofit groups, universities, and government organizations. Once a week, Lee comes to an Oldham arts program run by the Greater Manchester Youth Network, one of the many local organizations working on the problem.
What have you got here, Lee?
Have a look at
this.
Program organizer Katie Charlton leads the group, and on this day, they're working on collages using images from magazines. As the members flip through the pages, they point out favorite actors or musicians or places they want to visit, and they start to open up about their lives. Lee talks about his love for American rappers like Cardi B and Fetty Wap, and he confesses his lifelong dream. He wants to someday move to Florida and work with alligators at SeaWorld.
I see America more like bright than Oldham. Oldham's like dark and horrible. Yeah, lots. Not a nice place.
Younger people like Lee might be more vulnerable to loneliness because they typically don't have the emotional resilience that people develop as they get older. That's according to researcher James Duggan. He studies youth loneliness at Manchester Metropolitan University, and he's been closely involved with the local campaign. He says,
and it's something to do with the first, you know, the first relationship breakup, the first broken heart, the first time you move to a new city or a new school. And you don't have a set sense of who you are. And that can be great. It can be exciting. But you don't have, you know, the experience that you have overcome these things in the past. You don't have the strategies.
Many experts think loneliness may be connected with the recent increases in mental health problems and suicide among younger people. British politicians have said that loneliness doesn't discriminate by race or class, but research shows it hits lower-income people hardest. Duggan explains that in many Manchester neighborhoods, families have been stuck in poverty for decades, and younger generations feel like they will never have a place in the wider world.
A lot of young people don't have that confidence to challenge that, or don't have the support network around them to generate that kind of confidence. If you've got a mum and a brother and a grandparent who've never had that confidence, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Experts have a name for this feeling of not being valued by society. They call it collective loneliness. Loneliness and social isolation aren't new among younger people, but they may be getting worse due to a new feature of modern life. Back in the art class in Oldham, when a conversation hits a lull, the class members started reaching for their phones. I'm sure this isn't surprising to anyone who's been around a teenager, or most adults for that matter. But it turns out that phones and social media can amount to a lot more than just a way to kill time. Dr. Cesar Escobar Vieira of the University of Pittsburgh studies how social media is affecting young people's mental health.
We found that individuals who increased their social media use, they had less perception of emotional support.
It's not just a matter of time spent online. Research by Escobar Vieira and others suggest that how people use social media matters. In general, young people report more signs of depression as they increase what he calls passive use of social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram.
Passive social media use is basically the behavior of scrolling down your newsfeed or your timeline without actually engaging in any of the posts or comments, basically just staring at the pictures or other content without actually engaging.
Escobar Vieira says that the research is still in very early stages. Social media has evolved so quickly that experts are scrambling to keep up with trends like cyberbullying or fear of missing out, or what's happening in places like Manchester, where the lines between online trolling and real-life violence have all but disappeared.
Talk about shit, but I swear that's bro. I don't want to hear nothing about no smoke. Out of 10 man, 2 man are really on force. The man from Ross just like their clothes.
Manchester's social media is filled with rap videos where masked gang members make threats or brag about crimes. Guns are much more tightly controlled here than in the U.S., but the country has seen an alarming surge in youth knife crime. Danny Hussein is 22 and also part of the Oldham Arts class. On a break from the collage project, he explains that last year, one of his closest friends died after being stabbed. Danny says that even months later, he's still too upset or scared to leave his house.
It still hits you, you know what I mean? You still get flashbacks, you still get everything. It's just not nice.
The killing of Danny's friend, Mohammed Nabil Hassan, led to revenge attacks and a chain reaction of violence that lit up the evening news. To Danny, the reason for this social media-driven violence is clear.
For the fame, that's what I say, for the fame.
For many young people in Oldham, fame, or at least recognition, seems only available through online videos and media attention. British crime experts have compared the social media videos to radicalization campaigns by terrorist groups who target isolated young men, and politicians have taken steps to ban gang members convicted of knife crimes from using social media. However, social media isn't all bad. Dr. Escobar Vieira says that for people who don't have strong connections in their local communities, social media platforms can help them find others they can relate to. In these cases, social media can actually reduce depression for those who use it regularly.
For some of these individuals, social media might be sometimes their only window to actually be able to connect with others, meeting other individuals, establishing new friendships, or seeking and obtaining social support.
After his friend was killed, Danny Hussein took to social media to find others who were tired of the violence and wanted to speak out against it. Danny pulls up a music video on his phone to show off a song he helped produce. The lyrics talk about the toll that violence takes.
Look at what I've done. I've been out here in the slum. I couldn't give a fuck about your gun. Say it one more time. About 100 soldiers by my side.
But Danny says that when it comes to trying to fix the problems of violence and understanding what young people in places like Oldham are going through, the people in charge have a lot of work to do.
Obviously, parents should do more, the police should do more, the government should do more, and like the councils all should do more. The way that I see, like, they don't really care.
After talking through some tough issues, the Oldham class members go back to talking about movies or cars before wrapping up the day. Program organizer Katie Charlton acknowledges that these few hours each week may not seem like much, but coming to the class is a big step for some members who spend the rest of their week hiding from the world.
I think the biggest thing is to get young people out and to connect young people with their local communities, support them to feel part of something, I suppose. You know, for some young people, it is literally just about turning up and doing something, or maybe even not doing something, just being in the room.
That idea has hit home for Danny Hussein. He wants to start his own program to help people like himself to make music. Oh, To some observers, loneliness may appear to just be a symptom of our disconnected modern lives. But others say there's more to it. Coming up, we'll meet critics who argue that much of the loneliness problem is happening because of the government's policies. I'm Alex Smith, and this is a special episode of KCUR's Central Standard.